Support for the Capital Connection comes from Clean Path New York, working to support New York's economy and bring New Yorkers renewable energy while helping to create jobs. CleanPathNY.com for information.
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Here we are with, oh God, I love this guy, Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli. You know, there are good guys in government, and he's one of the best. And now we find all these people duking it out for who's going to be the governor, Hochul, and, you know, all these others. And you should be the governor. There's no question in my mind about that. You have more experience than anybody. You've been in the legislature, but you've been doing a sensational job as comptroller. And yeah, you know, you may not like it out there if you hear me praising somebody, but he deserves that praise. And here he is, Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli.
Alan, well, with that lead-in, what could I say other than I'm honored and flattered, and I'm well aware that if I said I was running for governor, you'd be giving me the tough questions and beating me up left and right. So, but I will take the kind words, and I appreciate it, and you know how much I love doing your show and appreciate for decades how you have kept your audience informed about what's happening in the state capital. So, Alan Chartok, right back at you. Thank you for being a hero and a champion to me and to so many, many people.
You know what Jack Benny would say to Rochester? Oh, come on. Okay, let's go. Mr. Comptroller, my question is this. We hear you're about to make some major climate investments. What do you got?
Well, Alan, on your show, I'm proud to break the news. I'm announcing that we are committing $2 billion of our pension fund to a new climate transition index that's going to be managed by the FTSE index program, and that's an organization we've had a partnership with for a long time. It's the FTSE Russell 1000 TPI Climate Transition Index. This will be part of our climate action plan. What we like about it is with an index fund, it is a cost-effective way for us to deploy capital, and they are going to overweight investments to companies that are committed to the transition to the low-carbon economy, underweight those that are not part of that transition. It's very much part of our green agenda, and $2 billion is a big part of our public equity portfolio that we're committed, and it's continuing our implementation of our climate action plan. We must deal with the climate emergency. We must comport with the goals of the Paris Agreement, and pension funds have a role to play in that.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, the thing is, maybe people won't want you playing footsie with their money.
Well, we're going to continue to make money for the pension fund and have that additional benefit of being part of the change that we all need to see to reverse the trend on global warming to save our planet.
SUNY Chancellor Malatros. Now, this is a very interesting thing. As you know, Tom, I'm a reformed college professor. I did it for 40 years. It's extraordinary. And it seems to me that this is a real breach of what ought to be happening in the academy. He shouldn't have been chosen by a governor put in there as opposed to letting a SUNY Board of Trustees do a national search. What do you think?
Well, that's certainly what they had done traditionally, and you know, Chancellor Johnson, who preceded him, I thought was outstanding, and I was I felt sorry when she moved on to greener pastures, you know, outside of New York. I guess she went back to Ohio. Yeah, look, it's always better to do a national search; it has more credibility. And look, one of the challenges, not just with the SUNY board, but with many of the boards that we have across the state, is that they're largely populated by gubernatorial appointments, and especially when you have a very strong governor, as you had in Andrew Cuomo, the independence of those boards is compromised, and that's a problem. I think it's been a problem with the MTA, and you just go down the long list of the various authorities and boards. Yeah, you could argue a governor's entitled, you know, then you hold the governor accountable, but you know, these boards, and I think especially you're right when you're talking about our academic institutions, they're really meant to be independent. That didn't happen in the case of this election. Not to say that he isn't a bright fellow, people know him, and he'd been in the SUNY system for a bit as well. But now that question of you know, what role should the Board of Trustees play vis-a-vis all the questions raised about his actions, you know, related to everything swirling around Andrew Cuomo, whether that disqualifies him to continue as SUNY Chancellor. It seems so far the board seems to be backing him up, but as more calls from, I saw Deborah Glick, chair of the Higher Ed Committee in the Assembly, you know, called for him to step down. The Student Assembly, I believe, did in a sense a no confidence vote. So, you know, if that continues, I think, you know, it really is incumbent upon the board to do their own evaluation, perhaps their own investigation, and don't just fall back on, you know, what they initially did, and really decide what's in the best interest of the SUNY system. So, you know, I think there's still more to come with that, how that saga plays out.
Now, Mr. Controller, you have been watching this. Is there a role for the controller, who basically looks at money issues? Are they spending it wisely? Is there anything wrong here? Should the controller be in a position to say, hey, cut it out, don't do it that way?
Well, I mean, certainly with regard to SUNY, absolutely. I mean, keep in mind, this was one of the areas where, because of that historic power, you know, the governor with the concurrence of the legislature reduced our oversight authority with regard to SUNY contracts. You know, and some of this is what contributed, I believe, lack of sufficient oversight to, you know, the economic development scandals, Buffalo Billion and so on, that, you know, resulted in criminal charges for some. Much of that authority, and we talked about this on your show over the years, has been restored, not necessarily all of it, and not by a statutory change, which I hope the legislature will do. But in fairness, I think any of the discussion on Malatras's tenure has not been about any financial misappropriation or impropriety. You know, it's so, you know, yeah, I mean, we continue our audits of SUNY, and we will continue to. But I don't think that's the question that's pending right now in terms of his tenure.
But, you know, it's interesting, Tom DiNapoli, if you look at the way this is all sort of playing out, this board, which has pledged its fealty to Malatras, was appointed by Cuomo. So
yeah,
there's still a lot of Cuomo hands on these boards who are still loyal to the now, you know, out of it governor.
True, you know, per, you know, my earlier point of that, you know, the good news there is you know who to hold accountable. The bad news is, especially when you have a change in governor, you have holdovers. So, but I also think the board, you know, generally speaking, you know, that's not a, I mean, there's some pretty impressive people on that board, starting, you know, with Merrill Tisch. They're savvy, they're smart, they're good New Yorkers, and, you know, certainly as more light is shed on this whole question, I wouldn't be surprised if there, you know, might be some change in direction. I think everybody, including the SUNY board, is hoping to work with Governor Hochul to do the right thing by the system. So, you know, let's see how this all plays out. I don't think the final chapter has been written on this one.
No, I would agree with that. I think that's right. Tom DiNapoli, how's New York doing in terms of the incoming money? You know, every day I talk to the great Amber Sickles and the folks at WMC, and I say, tell me about the money. How's the money coming? So how's the money
money's coming? The money's, show me the money, right? The money's coming in. I mean, you know, compared to, you know, go back several months, go back a year ago, where we were, you know, anticipating severe budget cuts and the continuing impact of the COVID shutdown and the slow recovery and questions about, you know, what role the federal government would play. Well, you know, fast forward to where we are today. A couple of things happening. Number one, the economy continues to recover. Is it perfect? No. It's certainly still somewhat uneven. But we, you know, we see the unemployment numbers, you know, continue to go down for the state, 6.9% in October. New York City, higher in New York City, you know, the city was hit early and hard by the pandemic, so the regrowth has been slower than we'd like, particularly in the city. We've grown back, I guess, just shy of 60% of the jobs that were lost. So it's moving in the right direction. The sales tax, you know, we see them coming in obviously higher than last year, where the numbers, you know, certainly were down. But what's interesting, when we looked at the numbers in October, not only were they up compared to a year earlier, close to 13% statewide, but they were 7% higher than 2019 than the pre-pandemic numbers. So that's good. So, you know, you look at other kinds of revenue, personal income tax, business tax, again, coming in stronger. Now, Alan, compared to where we thought we would be when the budget was put together back in April, we're actually up by over $8 billion ahead of where we thought we would be. So that's the combination of the economy recovering, stronger than first projected, number one. Number two, the legislature and the governor increased the tax rate, personal income tax rate on upper-income New Yorkers. That certainly accounts for some of the additional revenue. We haven't seen a decrease of personal income tax with those higher rates. But the big game changer, federal money, the American Rescue Plan, billions coming to New York, just for New York State, you know, some $12.7 billion, just for state government, not to mention the billions for local governments and hospitals and schools and so on. That really is the big game changer. So we are way ahead of where we thought we would be. The governor has updated our financial plan, so we're, you know, we're slightly ahead of the updated projections. But, hey, the budget's holding together. The money's coming in. What's the big unknown? Now, yet another variant, you know, for after Delta, now the Omicron, if I'm saying it right, not good on the Greek alphabet. If that moves us back to slowing things down, closing the economy again, this could all go in the other direction. And that's why you've seen some of the volatility in the stock market lately as well. But so far, we're on track for certainly the budget holding together, and that's good news.
So you're a stock market, as you just mentioned, you're a stock market watcher. I've been noticing something very interesting. When the Omicron news is bad, the stock market seems to go down. And when it says, it's not so much, the stock market goes up. That's pretty impressive, isn't it, that it's that reactive to the news of the day?
I don't know if impressive is the word that I would use. I think what it underscores, Alan, is that, you know, the stock market at the end of the day is as much about psychology as it is about financial analysis. So that's not necessarily a good thing. You know, because you'd like to think that, you know, the markets are going to, you know, behave based on good economic and financial data. But it just shows that, you know, so much of this is, you know, is the news of the day. And the other piece of it is, you know, you've got all these, you know, algorithms and, you know, these systems that then, you know, trigger either buying or selling, you know, again, not necessarily based on any thoughtful human beings analysis, but on other considerations. So, you know, that being said, we all are happy when the market is up, because certainly from our point of view as a pension fund investor, that's good news for us. Mm-hmm. So not all, but a lot of our portfolio is tied to the stock market. And you know, while we tend to think of wealthy people having stocks, you know, there are a fair number of folks in the middle also that you know, that own some of the stocks that pay decent dividends. So, you know, it's good news. And for New York, During the worst part of the pandemic, I mean, one of the few bright spots in terms of the economy was Wall Street. You know, Wall Street, you know, certainly we saw for this year. I mean, the first half of the year was almost record profits, over $30 billion. Whether that'll hold up by the end of December is unclear, you know, because of all the volatility. But they'll certainly have a good year this year when other parts of the economy weren't doing well. And as we've talked about on your show in the past, whether you love Wall Street or hate them, the tax revenue that we get by Wall Street being located in our state is caps like 18% of the revenue that comes to the state. That's a big chunk of our revenue. So we like when Wall Street does well, and then they pay their taxes. So that's good news. But you're absolutely right. Wall Street is so tied to you know, what's happening with the pandemic, what's happening with China, is Russia gonna invade Ukraine? I mean, all this stuff has day-to-day implications, and that's why, particularly in December, you've seen, you know, tremendous ups and downs. I just hope December ends on a positive.
Does the state pay too much money to its workers?
No. Hey, look, especially
Why do I ask this question? Because at least on two or three occasions, people have quit their, I think, well-paying jobs at WAMC and gone over, as they say, gone over to the state.
Well, there you go. There you go.
But that's the point. The point is, if they've gone over to the state, and we're paying good salaries, the state must be excessive. Don't you see?
No. It's, well, first of all, pay is part of it. I think one of the pluses of public employment continues to be the benefits. Again, not to pick on AMC, and I don't know your benefit package. You never made me a job offer. But
it's
health,
pretty good.
Health benefits are good with the
state.
Retirement.
Retirement,
having a defined benefit pension, which most places do not have anymore. You know, that's also a very positive for people. And working conditions, you know. But I think, and I know there are great working conditions there at WAFC. David Castino tells me that all the time. But, you know, but look, during this awful pandemic period, you know, state workers, and I'll say the same for our local government workers, really, truly, you know, have been among the essential workers on the front lines. They more than earned their pay and their compensation. And, you know, as contracts come up and will be settled, PEF, Public Employees Federation, recently had their contract settled and ratified. They were in line for an increase. I think it's certainly due and due them. And during the leaner years, they don't get much in terms of pay increases. Now that things are a bit better, I think not only do they work hard for what they get paid, but they've been entitled to a fair wage, and that includes an increase. So, no, I don't think the state overpays its workers.
So, Tom DiNapoli, we have national politics going on right now. If the Republicans win the elections in the off year, what will that mean to New York?
I don't think it will mean anything good, because I think if the Republicans win the House, and I know all the prognostications right now are that they will, but there's a long way to go before Election Day, I think you're going to see a return to the worst of gridlock. I mean, it's very hard for them to get anything done right now because of the slim majorities. But if you have, let's argue, the Senate stays slim majority Democrat, House goes Republican, as a lead-in to the, you know, the 2024 presidential, I think the Republicans will do anything that they can to make sure that President Biden has no victories legislatively. I think that will be bad for New York. It'll be bad for the country. So we're in such a polarized, politicized environment, and there's always a bit of that. There's no doubt about it. It's only gotten worse, you know, in the Trump era, and Trump, you know, still dominates the Republican Party politics. There's no question about it. And I add on top of it the folks in that party that still seem to hold to the myth that the election was stolen and wasn't fair. I think you'll have a very contentious, unproductive 2 years of relationship between Congress and the presidency, and that won't be good for the American people. It won't be good for New York. And obviously, given that New York will no doubt still be a delegation largely led by Democrats, they'll be in the minority if the Republicans win the House back and be able to deliver less for us in New York. So I'm certainly hopeful that the predictions will be wrong. The history of the out party winning seats in the off year, that will not hold true. And I certainly would like to see the Democrats continue to be in the majority.
Anything specific on your mind? For example, the deduction of state and local taxes, which is now being available to the blue states like New York and Massachusetts and so many others, we're getting it back. But if the Republicans win, are we bound to lose it all again?
Well, interesting question. But keep in mind, it's not back yet, right? There are versions of it, you know, raising the $10,000 to $80,000. I mean, some people are still holding out for the whole thing being, you know, gotten rid of. And I guess the whole thing phases out the cap by 2025 or something like that anyway. No, I mean, look, I think generally speaking, the Republicans have not favored extending that the SALT cap. So, again, that's the state and local tax deductibility, which for a high tax state like New York, you know, the those that support the idea of a cap or eliminating the deduction point to it as a giveaway of the rich. But in a place like New York, it's a lot of middle class folk. My neighbors on Long Island pay very high property taxes. So, you know, that $10,000 cap that we have right now is easily punctured, you know, by average folk, everyday folk, not just wealthy people. So, yeah, I mean, yes, that certainly could be one area that could go. But I think, you know, the broader context, Alan, is that, you know, when you go back to the Trump era, and we did get some federal help in response to the coronavirus pandemic and crisis, but it was largely reimbursement for unexpected expenditures. It was when the Democrats took over with Biden that we had the American Rescue Plan that really spoke to the economic damage, not just the health damage, but the economic damage and the loss of revenue to state and local governments that needed to be those holes, those gaps needed to be plugged because so many essential services were jeopardized if we were going to be running deficits and having to cut budgets to provide essential services. The Republicans have not favored that. You look at the arguments now with the Build Back Better, right, which is still not resolved, right? But the social infrastructure, child care, some of the other issues that I think are important to New Yorkers, at least there's a fighting chance for some of that. If the Republicans controlled one or both houses of Congress, nothing would be happening. Thankfully, we had some movement on the infrastructure issue. But, when the Republicans were in charge, they couldn't get that done. Democrats, I'll overgeneralize, take the view that government is a force for good and we need to support the active role of government to support communities. The Republicans tend to take, again, overgeneralizing, tend to take a view that government should be minimal and at the end of the day, families and communities will figure out how to fend for themselves. I mean, look, I think the long history of our country shows that, especially in time of crisis, the activist role for government is what's most appropriate. That's why I'm a Democrat. So we certainly want to see, Democrats continue. I think President Biden, who comes from the mainstream of the Democratic Party, has set the right tone, and it is, I think, a list of policy objectives that have been, not with some bumps along the way, but broadly embraced by all segments of the Democratic Party. Worry, though, you didn't raise this, Alan. My worry is, though, we head to the next presidential, that the Democratic Party, that the underlying divisions that obviously are there between whatever you want to call it, mainstream, traditional Democrats versus, again, whatever you want to call the more left Democrats. I know labels tend to change. I hope the disunity that Democrats sometimes are well known for doesn't make our chances even worse, not just for the presidential next go-around, but even for next year, even for the congressional races next year. The Democrats, Republicans, I give them this, and we saw that in the local elections this year across the state, certainly on Long Island, where I live, where Republicans had major gains. Republicans are well-disciplined, and I saw that growing up in a Republican household with my parents. They knew what to do and how to vote and to vote. Democrats tend to be harder to corral to be on the same team. I mean, I don't know whether that's in the culture or whatever, but what happened in New York, blue New York that we were talking about, should be a real wake-up call to Democrats not to take the voters for granted. We lost a lot of seats that we shouldn't have lost in 2021. Not necessarily a good lead-in for 2022.
Inflation. Hey, we're running out of time here, so keep these answers short, Mr. Controller, please, because, I got a little bit more to ask you here. Inflation, will it continue?
It's continued higher than I would have anticipated and longer. Let's hope the smart people at the Fed are on top of how we can trim it down.
Who are you endorsing for governor?
At this point, I'm focused on making sure have a great controller. Continuing, and I'm focused on the controller race. And you get no endorsement from me. Alan, since you decided not to run for governor, move back to New York and run for governor, I'm staying on the sidelines for now.
Okay, that's fine. The pension fund, is it doing very well or very, very well or very, very well?
As we ended last year, very, very well, over 33% positive return. Not going to be 33% positive this year, but we're on track for another positive year. We lowered the assumed rate of return to 5.9%, which I think will enable us to meet our target even in these volatile times. So, yes, I'm optimistic we are doing very well once again.
Ethics reform. How are we going to do that? We have these boards. Are we going to finally figure this out so that we have people who aren't running around with their tail between their legs, afraid of everything?
We better. J. Cope or J. Joke, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
I mean,
the whole thing needs
to be stripped down and recreated from scratch. And I'm optimistic with great reformers like Senator Liz Krueger leading the way. We'll have a truly independent and ethics process and panel that we can have some confidence in.
How about all them prisons we're supposed to be closing, and people are saying, you can't close our prisons, we're dependent on them for making a living in the places they're at. What do you think?
Well, look, there's no doubt that's the direction we've been moving in, and we'll continue to move in. There are smart alternatives to incarceration that I think we need to encourage, and certainly we need to be mindful of those that are displaced from a job perspective, work with them to make sure they have jobs elsewhere in the state, and you know, so I think you can do both.
Department of Motor Vehicles faces supply chain delays. This is something right up your alley, Mr. Comptroller. Are all the registration forms for the DMV being held up in the port?
I just saw we have not done a specific look at that, but I have great confidence in our Commissioner of Motor Vehicles, Mark Schroeder, a former colleague of mine from the Assembly. I know he's on top of doing whatever he can to break through the challenge of the supply chain, and anything we could do to help him, we certainly stand ready to do that.
Okay. So what I'm worried about now is that this inflation is going to keep going and we're going to be in trouble. So we're raising a lot more money. I know I mentioned this earlier. We raised a lot more money than we have in the past. But is the money worth it? In other words, is a dollar still a dollar anymore?
No. Okay. Inflation, you know, makes the money we earn not go as far. You know, prices eat up more and more. But look, we need to have that inflation start to slow down and reverse. A lot of that has to do with federal policy and federal changes, but it all certainly underscores the need that we have to be smart with how we spend the money, which is why I hope when we do our audits, you know, we just had another series of audits on Medicaid and showed too much waste in that program. I hope the administration pays attention to what we're saying, how we could save money in an inflationary time. The tax dollars are even more precious, so being as efficient as possible, that has to be a priority.
Okay, and one last question. It's only four words. Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo.
That's not a question.
That's a question. Okay. Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, question mark. This is a tough time for the Cuomo.
They both would have been better served if they were in Madame Beerbaum's French class years ago. We'll let their situations play out. No comment there.
Well, we have put out the call so many times. You and I, where is Madame Beerbaum? Where is she?
I think we need to offer a reward
incentive
for someone to give us an update. Yeah.
Okay. If you know where Madame Beerbaum, my ex-French teacher, and that of Norman Adler, is, let us know, and you get a WAMC tote bag, hat, gloves, you name
it. And Chartok bobblehead.
And a bobblehead. We'll announce it. Okay, so it's at WAMC.org, and let us know. In the meantime, Tom DiNapoli, we love you, and we love having these conversations with you. And I am so pleased that you're still with us and that you're not running for governor, even though you could have probably won. But now that you're not, that's really great, because we'll just keep on doing what we're doing.
Great. Love you too, Alan. Thanks.